We're holding on then set from the day that I threw the way down yonder. The Mishnah had talked about a couple of different cases involving a shur falling into a bur. One of them was, if the owner of the chaser, if his father or his son was there in the pit and the shur fell on him and killed him, Mishalom as a kofer, and the owner of the shur is going to have to pay kofer. So the question is, why should he have to pay kofer? We're assuming that the animal in the Mishnah is a tam, because usually, unless otherwise specified, that's what the Mishnah means. And a tam doesn't pay kofer. You only pay kofer if the animal is a mu'ud. No, you were talking about kill the person, so there's no chatzin nezek versus nezek shalom to talk about. Here, what would happen is, assuming that it was a tam and it did it deliberately, the shur would be chayav misa, but presumably, well, we'll talk about that soon, the possibility. We'll talk about that maybe the Mishnah is talking about chatzi kofer, but we're not up to that yet. First, we're assuming that on the one hand, the animal is a tam, on the other hand, we're saying full kofer. So what is it? We're talking about an animal which is mu'ud to fall on people in pits. In other words, it's already, so Rashi learns mu'ud in the regular sense. In other words, it's done this three times already. So for whatever reason, it hasn't gotten killed up until this point, like it should have. But
the basin
didn't deal with it, whatever. That's Rashi's going to deal with in a second.
But how could they count its time?
Because, so what happened was it did it one time, Adam came, but nevertheless, for whatever reason, Basin didn't kill it, which is what the Gemara is going to ask, why not? But that's in a second, but we're assuming that that's the case. Tosfos actually learns a little bit of Tosfos on an earlier daf, where the Gemara discussed this issue briefly, had a different explanation that Mu'ud doesn't necessarily have to mean that it did it three times, it just because the Gemara is going to end up saying over here, it's not really so much a matter of Keren, that it's a tulda of goring with its horns, it's rather, the Gemara is going to continue, that it's sort of more like shame in the sense that it was trying to eat, and therefore it doesn't necessarily have to do it three times. An animal is always more to eat. Fine, in that case, the animal should have long since been killed, because even the first time it does this, it'll be chayav misa. Now, so Rashi explains, okay, so the other day we had, the Gemara had discussed in general, if a shur is supposed to be killed after it killed a person once, how does it ever have a chance to become mu'ud? And the Gemara gave various answers, such as, for example, that every time after it killed a person, it ran away, or Adim came, but then the other Adim came and were mazim them, etc. Here, the shur is stuck in the bur. It didn't get out of there by itself. And you're not going to have any kind of taste of Adim's over, Rashi says, because Mela, regular case, a shur gores a person, fine. If some people heard about it, other people didn't. It'll be possible to say, you know what, how could you, have you claim that you were here, but really you were someplace else, because that's what Adim's argument are. Here, when a shur falls into a burr and kills somebody, especially if it did it multiple times, that's a very unusual thing. Everybody's going to hear about it. There's not really going to be, you're not going to really have that people who weren't in town are going to go and try to pretend that we're Adim on it when they know that they can easily be refuted. Back to the question, how does this animal get to become a mu'ud in the first place? Amar Rabbi Yosef, the chazi yiruk of a nachal. So Rabbi Yosef answers, you can have a case. The animal saw grass by the edge of the burr, it went to eat, and it fell into the burr. So it's mu'ud in the sense that it fell into the burr many times. It's already done this a bunch of times, that it tried to eat from the edge of the burr and fell in and ended up killing somebody. But there was no kavana. There was no kavana, so therefore you can't say that it was chayav misa.
How
can
we call
it
a mu'ud? Just trying to eat grass.
So that's the thing then. So because after all, here what you have is it did it several times. After all, it is mishunar, Rashi says. So you can't. In a way, it's like shame. In a way, it's like shame because the animal is trying to eat. Shame an animal is mu'ud for to begin with. You don't even need three times. However, in this case, it's unusual that it should fall into a burr. But if you have, after each time, when it tried to eat the grass, it fell into a burr and killed somebody, and each time Adam have come to Beis Din and told the fact, okay, the shur is not going to be chayav misa because it didn't have kavana to kill anybody. Nevertheless, after three times of that, you're not going to be chayav misa, but you still are going to be chayav kofer because at that point, you should have been watching your animal and making sure that it doesn't go and try to eat grass from the edge of the burr. That's how Rashi learns. Tosfos, again, learns a little bit differently, that the verdict is that the animal intended not only to eat the grass from the edge of the burr, it intended to jump into the burr in order to find more grass there or whatever, and maybe even it knew that there was a person there, but it wasn't doing it for the sake of killing the person. It was doing it for the sake of eating the grass. And therefore, again, you can't consider it chayav nisa, but you could make the owner chayav nisa. Shmuel Amar, Shmuel gives a different answer. Hamani Rav Yosi Aglili. You don't have to say that. You could say that the Mishnah goes according to Rav Yosi Aglili. Don't have a tam mishalim chatzi koifer. He says, as a matter of fact, the animal when it's a tam will pay chatzi koifer. Okay, just like with nezik of an animal, you pay chatzi nezik when it's a tam and nezik shalom when it's a muad. Same thing with koifer. Rav Yosi Aglili holds chatzi koifer when it's a tam, koifer shalom when it's a muad. Fine. Our Mishnah could be talking according to that. Ula Omar, Ula says it's third possibility. I agree that Rav Yosi Aglili, but I will add the detail to Omar Kerev Tarfon. I will add that in this particular case, Rav Yosi Aglili agrees with Rav Tarfon. The Omar, which Rav Tarfon says, we had a few times in the Masechta already, Keren v'chatzara nizik nezik shalom mishalim, that if an animal gores, the av or the tolda of Keren, in the chatzar of the nizik, then even if it's a tam, you still pay nezek shalom mishalim. You still pay nezek shalom. Earlier in the Sefer, he looked at it from a kavah choymer. So by the same logic, since Rav Yosi Aglili holds that a tam already is paying kofer, just chassi kofer, fine, he'll say in this case, since it was in the chaser of the nezek, hachinam and kofer shalom mishalim. He will say, following that same logic of Rav Tarfon, you'll have to say that over here it won't just be chassi kofer, even though it's a tam, it'll actually be full kofer.
Is arguing that not that it's not like a not that this mission is not going like Rav Yosi, that it's just the way he basically holds this mission?
He would say, yeah, no, he's saying the Mishnah would be going according to Rav Yosi Aglili, but you have to add the detail that not only Rav Yosi Aglili would say that a tam usually pays chatzi kofer and a muad pays kofer shalom, but also that he agrees with Rav Tarfon that in chatzara nezek he always pays kofer shalom even if he's a tam, which is in this case, which explains why in this case when the Mishnah said chayev, it means chayev and full kofer. Fine. Okay, so I can understand very well according to Ula. That is why, according to Ula, who says that the animal was tam and you're paying full kofer, that's why the Mishnah went to the point of mentioning not just that anybody was in this burr and got killed, but that there was other, you know, the father or the son of the owner of the chaser. Because then that amounts to, now that the animal fell on this person, and we're assuming it's Karen, we're not assuming, like before, that it's Shane. So, because the father or the son of the owner of the chatzar was there, that makes it chatzara nizik. That means that he committed keren in chatzara nizik, and therefore, okay, well, that explains why the Mishnah had to mention that detail, because otherwise you wouldn't have kofer shalom, according to Rav Yosi Aglili. Elul Shmuel, but according to Shmuel's explanation, that it doesn't matter. We're not even bringing in Rav Tarfon's opinion. We're just saying that according to Rav Yosi Aglili, since the animal at the time you're paying chatzi nizik regardless, why does it have to mention Dafka, his father or his son was in the bird? And if anybody else was in the bird, the same rule would apply. Because according to Shmuel's way of looking at it, Rabbi Yosi Aglili doesn't care whether it's chatzara nizik or not. Either way, it's chatzi kofer. So who cares who it was in the bird? And the answer is Urcha de Milta Katani. Okay, true. But the Mishnah is just using a usual case. Typically, who are you going to have in a bird? Somebody's chaser, usually it's going to be either the Baal HaChaser himself or a member of his family. It's not likely to be some stranger from off the street.
Probably
it means the owner of the chaser, his father or his son. So that answers, so it's true. The Mishnah didn't have to mention other but no. The same din would apply according to Shmuel regardless who it was in the bird. But usually, typically, that's how it would be. One more detail, by the way, Tosfos mentions, when we were talking about before, when we said the animal was moored to fall on people with burrs, so when the Gemara started saying that, Tosfos points out, it doesn't even really need to be that it actually, if we're saying that that's enough to make the animal moored, it didn't even have to be the people in the burrs the previous time. It could just be, three times already, the animal has jumped into the burr to find more grass or whatever. There weren't people in there all those times. Nevertheless, by now, it's a muad that we know whenever it finds grass by the edge of the burr, it's going to jump into the burr and try to find more over there. So now, point it happened. The fourth time, there happened to be a person in there. The Mishnah said v'mhichnas l'rishus bal chatzah chayav. The Mishnah said that in the various cases the Mishnah, that you have a potter who's bringing in pots, or a person brings in payers, or a person brings in insurer, that in any of those cases, if he brought it in with the permission of the owner of the chatzah, then the owner of the chatzah is chayav for any damage that's caused to them. And then we had Rebbe saying that, no, not unless the owner of the chatzah specifically said, I'll watch yourself. I'm taking responsibility. So who's the halacha like? It's right. That said, Rabba Mahilchus at Tanakama, Rishmullah Mahilchus at Kirebi. So it's not close to some of the which town of the halacha is like. Usually in Dinim Mominus, we usually say the halacha is like Shmuel. So according to that, it should have to come out the halacha is like Rebbe in our Mishnah, that only if he specifically said, I'll watch it. Tosfos asks on that, that the Gemara before, the Chesamar Aleph, had a whole discussion where Rava mentioned various dinim that seemed to only work according to the Rabbanan, and the Pashtus, Halacha is like Rava in all those things. So there are different Rishonim talk about the possibility that maybe we can explain those statements of Rava as working according to Rebbe as well. In practice, the Halacha is generally, in this particular instance, the Halacha is like Rebbe. That unless the Baal HaChatzah specifically says, I'll watch your pot to be sure, or whatever, then he's not responsible.
Generally, the halacha like
usually, when you have a machlokes with the Rebbe and the Chacham, usually the halacha is like the Chacham. But on the other hand, when you have a machlokes amiroyim between Rav and Shmuel, usually the rule is in dine iser v'heter, like kashrus or korbanos or what have you, the halacha is like Rav, and in dine mominus, the halacha is usually like Shmuel, and that's how it is here also. We learn in a bit. If the owner of the chatzah says knos shorcha v'shmoroi, you can bring in your shor, but you have to watch it. So his ikhayev, if that shor causes damage in the chatzah, the owner of the shor is chayev, because the Baal HaChatzah specifically told him, I'm not watching it, I'm leaving it up to you to watch. Who's that chatzah? But if he says, but if the shor gets injured, let's say the shor trips over something in the chatzah, then the owner of the chatzah is chatzah. Because again, he didn't take responsibility for it. On the other hand, if he says, bring in your shor and I will watch it, who's a chayev? Then if the shor gets injured in the chatzer, the owner of the chatzer is going to be chayev. He's a chatzer, and if the shor caused damage in the chatzer, then the owner of the shor is going to be chatzer.
He's not sure.
Bapashas is a shemachina. But the real question that the Gemara is going to get to, so what happens if he didn't say anything? You have the Bryce is mentioning where he said, I won't watch it, or he said, I will watch it. What about the middle case where he just said, come on in, without saying anything? So that's the question. Bapashas, you have a contradiction in the Bryce. Amrit, knois shor, ho shmaroi. Then you start by saying that if he says, bring in your shor, and I'm willing to watch it, but you have to watch it, his it chayev, who is it chotzer? So we're saying if the shor causes damage, the owner of the shor is going to be chayev. But if it gets injured, then the owner of the chotzer is chotzer. Time to amaleh shomer. Now, why is that? Only because he specifically says, you need to watch your shor. I'm not taking responsibility for it. And then the chayev baal shor is chotzer baal chotzer. Only because of that is the owner of the shor chayev and the owner of the chotzer is chotzer. It sounds like if you didn't say anything, if you just said, come on in, without saying one way or the other, you have to watch it or I'll watch it, it sounds like in that the Braita seems to be implying that in that case, the owner of the shur will be potter and the owner of the chatzah will be chayev. It sounds like the Braita is saying that if he doesn't say, shmoroi, you watch it, then implicitly that means I'll watch it, which is according to the Chum. However, a mistake, but look at the second part of the Braita. Knos shor chavani yishmirenu. What if it's the other way around? He says, bring in your shor, and he specifically says, and I'll watch it. Who's a chayev, his chatzer? So then we say that if the shor is injured, the owner of the chatzer is chayev, and if the shor causes damage, the baal shor is chatzer. Taima do amalei vani yishmirenu, we do chayev baal chatzer, chatzer baal shor. Now that's only Braita specifically mentioning that the baal chatzer said, I will watch it. It sounds like if he didn't say ani yeshmirenu, then the second part of the braita seems to be implying that he means that in that case, the baal asher is going to be chayev, and I, the baal achatzer, will be potter. There was some avoid kamala l'netirul. It sounds like the stam, without saying anything, he's not accepting responsibility. I saw in the Rebbe. Now that part throws the point to Rebbe. Drama adchi kamala l'netirul. So baal abayis lishma. Rebbe says that only if the baal abayis specifically says that I will watch it, that I'm taking responsibility for it, then he's chayev, otherwise not.
And And according to Rabbi, if he doesn't say anything,
because that's his point. According to Rabbi, if he doesn't say anything, he hasn't taken responsibility. The assumption is he hasn't taken responsibility, according to Rabbi, unless he specifically says, I will take responsibility. And according to the Rabbanon, the other way around, if he doesn't say anything, but he says, come on in, we assume that means he's taken responsibility. So what do you have in this Braita? No, according to the Rabbanon, if he says, I take responsibility, right. According to the Rabbanon, right. It wouldn't, the only way, according to the Rabbanon, he'd be culture from responsibility is if he specifically said, you have to watch it, which is the first case in the Braita. That's what we're saying. The first case in the Braita seems to be according to the Rabbanon, that you actually have to say, I won't watch it, you have to watch it. Whereas the second case, where it says that if he says, I will watch it, only then is he chayev, that seems to be like Rebbe, that you have to actually say, I will watch it, otherwise you're not chayev. So what do you have? Beis Rabbanon, the Sefer Rebbe? What do you have, a braisa over here, where the first part is according to Rabbanon, and the last part is according to Rebbe? Amar Rabbi Loza, Tavra. So Rabbi Loza says, yes, as a matter of fact, it's a stira. Misha shonazu, lo shonazu. Evidently, this braisa comes from two different tanoim. One who holds like Rebbe and one who holds like the Rabbanon. Rabba, or maybe actually we discussed yesterday that some of the Poshim say that maybe the vote would be that the Tana of the first part of the Braisa maybe says that Rebbe and the Rabbanon are not arguing, they both agree. And the Tana of the second part of the Braisa would be saying actually Rebbe disagrees with the Rabbanon. Rabba Amar, Rabba says you don't need that. Kula Rabbanon, you could say the whole Braisa goes according to the Rabbanon. Because I did not, and it's just the language in the second part is not exact. I did not reisha shmorei, since the first part of the braisa necessarily has to say according to Chachamim that he says you watch it, because again according to Chachamim if he doesn't say anything he has taken responsibility. Tanit says about Yeshmirenu, so the second part mentions that I'll watch it, but it's true according to the Rabbanon you wouldn't technically need that as long as he didn't say anything. Yes, he'd be chayav. Rapapa, I'm a cooler Rebbe. Rapapa says the other way around. Actually, you could say the whole Braisa goes according to Rebbe. So why in the first part does he have to say Shmoroi? Because the Sovelak Rav Tarfon, again, we can assume, we can bring in Rav Tarfon's opinion about Keren, about there being a difference in Keren, whether you're in the Chatzir or the Nizik or not. So the Sovelak Rav Tarfon, Rebbe will agree with Rav Tarfon, Dama Keren, Rachatan, Nizik, Nezik, Shalom, Shalom. He says that if an animal gores in the Chatzir or the Nizik, that he pays Nezek Sholem, even if he's a Tam. Hilka, so it comes out like this. If the owner of the Chatzar says to the owner of the Shur, you watch your animal, what that amounts to is Loy Makni Le Makam B'Chatzar. It amounts to saying, I'm not being Makni to you any part of my Chatzar. My Chatzar is still 100% mine, and you have no Rishus to, you have Rishus to bring in your animal, but you don't. I'm not being machna to you any part of your chatzar to keep your shirt. Therefore, the havila keren b'chatzar nizik. So therefore, it amounts to now when this animal gores in that chatzar, it's in the chatzar of the nizik because it belongs completely to the nizik. The nizik didn't give any of the balabas didn't give any of it to the owner of the shirt. The keren b'chatzar nizik shalom nizik shalom. And according to the Tarkin, which we're saying Rebbe agrees with that. In the Chatzar Nezik, you're going to pay Nezik Sholem. So when the Braisa said Chayev, he didn't mean Chayev, Chati Nezik, or Nezik Sholem, as the case may be. It meant always Nezik Sholem. Whereas Lord Omele Shmora, if he didn't tell him you watch it, fine, it's true according to Rebbe that I'm not accepting responsibility unless I actually say I will watch it. But still, by not saying anything, what you have is it's true. You still have responsibility for the Shur, not me. However, I am allowing you to have a certain reshus in my chatzar.
And what's status for that fundament?
Therefore, that makes it a knuya achnim l'makam b'chatzar. Effectively, he's been machmehem an area in that chatzar, the havila chatzar ha-shutvin. Now, this chatzar becomes the chatzar of shutvin. Now, both of them have a shutvus in it. Keren b'chatzar ha-shutvin, and mishalam al-chatzin ezek. And Reb Tarfon will say that chatzar ha-shutvin is just like reshus ha-rabim, or just like the fields, or anything like that. An animal of the tam is only going to pay chatzi nezik in that case. An animal of the tam is only going to pay chatzi nezik. So when the braisa said that in that case, he said that he's potter, that if he's potter, he didn't mean potter completely. He just meant potter from nezik sholo. He'll still be chayv in chatzi nezik. Because not because there's no shukfus in the animal. There's a shukfus in the chotzer. And according to the Tarifin, you're only paying Nezik Shalom when it's a chatzar that belongs exclusively to the Nezik, and the Mazik has no reshus in that chatzar at all.
If the animal, if they got damaged, so they only have to pay half first?
If the animal got damaged, no. So what we're saying is, if the animal got damaged in that case, we're saying that, according to Rebbe, the animal got damaged, so in order for the Bala chatzar to be chayav, he would have had to take responsibility. But he didn't. He didn't say shmorah. He didn't specifically say, you watch your animal. But he also didn't say, ani eshmirenu, I will watch it. According to Rebbe, he has to actually say, ani eshmirenu, to have responsibility. Therefore, the Bala chatzar will be patur if the shor gets injured. The question is only, why are we saying that the owner of the shor is chayav in one case and patur in another? So we're saying chayav and patur just means nezek shalom versus chatzi nezek, as the case may be. So therefore, you can understand the two parts of the braita. Again, you have Rav Elazar's way that it's actually two different tanoim. You have Rava's way that it's all according to the Rabbanan, and just the last part of it is not using a precise lashon. And you have Rav Papa's explanation that the reason why he mentions shmoroi or not or shmoroi versus not is not to deal with the question of who has a chrayus for the animal, but to deal with the question that is it chasara nizik or not.
And the end halacha is like.
It's a braisa. We brought a braisa. It doesn't mean the halacha has to be like anything in that braisa. I mean, in practice, we said before, the halacha is like Rebbe. That unless Achi, Kabbalah of Lishmer, unless the Bala Chassar specifically says, I will guard the animal, then he's potter. Although, again, we had there were a couple of things that Rava had mentioned in the Gemara previously, earlier in the Sugya, that mentioned various cases where the owner of the shur is going to be, various cases where the owner of the chaser or the owner of the shur, as the case may be, is going to be responsible in certain specific cases. There was a case yesterday, for example, where the Bala chaser isn't able to be around, therefore the Bala shur has full responsibility. There can be a difference. Some of the folks say there may be a difference between whether if the owner, or actually the Gemara itself mentioned yesterday, that if the owner of the chaser himself damaged the shur, then he'll be chayev, because you can say, the owner of the shur can say, you have the right to kick out my shur, but you didn't have the right to injure it. You had all those details.
Okay, that's
all
clear about.
All right. Thank you for being there. All right. We are holding on Memchet on the days at the bottom.
That's up to you if you want to get the share or not.
No, it needs to be done. Otherwise, we're going to fall further and further behind. So, do what we can.
I wish I had the last question for my own standard.
Mishnah says, Shur Shahi Miskavan Machaber, if you have a Shur that was aiming for another Shur to hit it, So now I should mention as a background, we talked a little bit in the previous parak about the concept. The Torah tells us that if a person injures a pregnant woman and makes her miscarry, he's going to be chayev dmei vlodet. He's going to be chayev a certain payment to the woman's husband for the babies that were lost. So we discussed it previously, and now the Mishnah and the Gemara are going to take up this point again.
He intended to kill somebody else.
That we talked over there about the case where he was intending to hit or to kill somebody else. Yeah, but here we're going to be talking about it, which we're going to be talking about mostly in connection with a shur that injures a pregnant woman. We're going to be talking about both. We're going to be talking about a shur and we're going to be talking about a person. So shur shayim is kavam machaber. Shur was aiming for another animal. The hikay is ish of yatsu yodeha, and instead it hit a woman and made her miscarry. Which, by the way, Rashi says not necessarily does it have to be, even if the shur did intend to hit her, then the din of our Mishnah will still apply. The Gemara will discuss why Taka the Mishnah mentions the case where the shur was aiming for another shur. The din, the owner of the shur, is part of it, may have is in fact true regardless of the intentions of the shur, because we learned previously. Anoshim, because the Torah said Abala Shonaki. On the other hand, the other Shoyu was Gavam Machaber, but if you have a person that was aiming to hit somebody else, and instead he hit a woman and made her miscarry, Mishalom Dmei Vlodet, in that case he does have to pay Dmei Vlodet. This is, by the way, all assuming the woman stays alive. If she dies, then there's other rules which we talked about before. Do we do it with Kamal Ebedidah? We had Rav Shimon and the Chachamim, how it works in that case, but here she stayed alive. It's only she was scary. Kesed Mishalim Dmei Mordis, how do you pay Dmei, how do you estimate Dmei Mordis? Shominus Isha Kamei Hiyafa Abshala Yolda, you figure out the value of the woman, how much she would have been worth before she gave birth, when she's pregnant, the Kamei Hiyafa Mish Yolda, and now how much she's worth less after she gave birth. The Pashtus, in other words, we assume a person would rather want to buy a pregnant maid servant, so he'll have a baby. That difference is what you pay. No, Yoppa is the Gemara standard. The Mishnah.
Why should it be standard?
Throughout Shas, the word Yoppa is standard. Throughout Mishnah, the word Yoppa is always a standard word for how much something is worth. Show you Yoppa, the Mosayim we had before, for example. Yeah. Okay. By the way, Tosfos has a different explanation. Tosfos says that Tosfos on a previous Amud, when we discussed the whole matter of Dmei Vlodis, actually, the Sylvia that we discussed the other day about with the whole mathematics and how you figure out for the Torah that was pregnant, et cetera, that we had the other day. Tosfos learns over there, we're not actually talking about over here figuring out the value. We're not using this to figure out the value of the baby. Because the difference is the Torah and her unborn baby all belong to the owner. The woman doesn't belong to her, she belongs to her husband in the sense that she's his wife, but doesn't belong to him in the sense her body is not his resource. So therefore, Tosfos learns, no, the value of the babies, for sure, you estimate them independently. What we're talking about over here is really how much the fact that it's similar to the Gemara that we had over there, the fact that she gained weight during the pregnancy, and that itself makes her worth more, were she to be sold as a slave. That's what we're dealing with, how much you figure that. And then you add to that the actual value of how much the babies could be expected to have been worth once they were born. So Shimon Gamliel says, though, the problem is the way that you're calculating that in Cain, Misha Isha Yeladis Nashvacha. When a woman gives birth, she goes up in value. The Gemara is going to discuss what Shimon Gamliel means by this. But the basic idea is, as we'll discuss over there, that once she's pregnant, there's still always the risk that she may die in childbirth or whatever. So Abadabi, you can't talk about that she goes down in value after giving birth. In a certain sense, she goes up in value. What? Well, but that also depends on this way of on this thing. Is the Mishnah talking about it's figuring out the actual Dmei Vlodis or the Shvacha Isha? You say that the Mishnah, like Tosfos, that the Mishnah is talking about only Shvacha Isha, then what Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is objecting becomes much easier to understand. Ella, no. Shominus of Lodus Kamein Yopin. No, we have to figure out the actual value of the children, how much they would have been worth. Benoisim Abal, and you give that amount to the husband. Meaning, in other words, again, you know, they won't be worth as they won't be worth as much as actual born babies, because there is always a chance that, you know, if a person were to be in other words, if a person were to be buying a maid servant, let's say, on the condition that, you know, you make a deal, for example, you keep the maid servant, but when she has babies, I'll get them. You figure out their value independently, because again, there's a certain discount over there because they may not end up being born viable at that rate. So you give that to the husband. The im ein labal, if she doesn't have a husband, noisim the yoshev, meaning if he died, noisim the yoshev, then you give the money. Then you give the money instead to his yoshev. No, she's still alive, but the Torah gives the money to him. The Torah says kasha yoshev sort of baal isha. So we'll discuss in the Gemara the various permutations, or there are cases when she gets it, etc. Hayta shivcha v'nishtapura, what if she was a shivcha who then was freed, a geyura, so she's a geyura, which Rashi says means the key thing is not so much that she herself is a shivcha m'shachareres or geyura, but that she's married to a ger or an eben m'shachareres. So if her husband dies, then he doesn't have any heirs, if he doesn't have any other children, because again, he's not related to his previous family. So then the one who did the hezek is potter because then there's nobody to give it to. The nixei ager shemesh are anyway after, and therefore for that person is the chenis master. No, that's the case when he stole from a ger and then swore falsely about it or whatever, and then the guy died. We'll learn about that towards the end of the session. We'll have a whole sugya about that. Yeah. We learned previously that Tosfos brought up the point that maybe the revolted Tosfos brought up the point that maybe this case of Shivcha and Shtakra is actually talking about that when she became pregnant, she was still a Shivcha, and then after she became pregnant, before the attack and the miscarriage, she was free. Tosfos. The rest of the opinions in Tosfos, as well as Rashi over here, are learning that it's talking about that she became pregnant. She became pregnant after being on the Shacharis over here.
Should she be a regular woman at that point?
Yeah, but that's the thing. Rashi says the key thing is not so much who she is, but the key thing is who her husband is. Right, well, now, in other words, like this, if her husband was a born Jew, he would have Yershim, because every born Jew has Yershim, somebody else from his Shevet, but a Ger and every Meshucher doesn't have that. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. Kaima de Miskavim Lachaber. So what is the implication of the Mishnah saying, why is the owner of the Shur potter from Dmei Vlodis? Because the Shur was aiming for another Shur. Ha Miskavim Leisha, implying, though, that if the Shur was actually aiming for the woman directly, Mishalim Dmei Vlodis, and you would pay Dmei Vlodis, it sounds like. The problem with that is, Le Mitzavit Yufzit of Adab Ava. In that case, then does that mean that our Mishnah is a contradiction to Rab Adab Ava? The Omer of Adab Ava, which he says, we learned in the Sugya previously, when we learned last week, when we first started talking about Dmei Vlodis, he said, Shvorim Shiniskavna Leishap Turim in Dmei Vlodis. He says, actually, that no, even if the Shur is aiming for the woman, the owner of the Shur is still possible from Dmei Vlodis. Because he was explaining over there what Rabbi Yosi Aglili and Rabbi Akiva were discussing about the limud over there, that Rabbi Yosi Aglili learns from Ubal Hashon Naki, that the owner of the Shur is possible from Dmei Vlodis, and then Rabbi Akiva learned from that it says, B'chi Yonotu Anoshim, meaning not Shvorim. But Abba Ava had explained over there that it doesn't matter. The owner of a shur is always potter from Dmei Vlodis.
What is discovered? It seems like a subjective thing. Right?
Well, no, I mean, you can tell whether the animal is aiming for her or whether, you know, whatever. The point is, Abba Ava is saying the kavanah doesn't matter. So our Mishnah seems to contradict that. No, because you could answer that the Mishnah doesn't mean only if the animal was aiming for somebody else. Even if it did, even if it was aiming for the woman also, the owner will be positive from the main bloodless. So why does the Mishnah specify that it was aiming for another shur? It's just either the kavod the Mishnah safer. It's just because for parallelism. Since the Mishnah needs to continue, other right? Where the Mishnah needs to continue of a case that was a man that was aiming to hit another person, the Hachik Sivkra, which after all, that is the scenario of the Pasuk envisions, that two people are fighting and one of them intends to hit the other one and accidentally hits the woman. So there, necessarily, therefore, the Mishnah had to use the word Miskav Machaberi. So the Reisha also used the same expression, even though it's not really necessary. So the answer is, in other words, that Shur Shur Miskav Machaberi is not meant precisely. It doesn't matter what the Shur's Kavanah was. As long as he caused it a miscarry, regardless, he caused it a miscarry, the owner is possible from the main bodies. But in the case of people...
But it talks about two cases, Shur Shur and Miskav Machaberi, he should be able to live with the name of others.
Right. Adam Shem Miskav Machaberi. So the Adam Shem Miskav Machaberi had to say Shem Miskav Machaberi because that's the case that the Torah talks about. So therefore, to keep parallel with it, it used the same expression by a Shem.
So what's the answer?
That's the point. According to Rabbi Abba, there was no difference what the Shem's Kavanah was. But since the next line say Adam Shay Miskavim Machaberi, so therefore the first line starts off Shur Shur Miskavim Machaberi.
Shur
is part of regardless. I'm going to pop that. Another din, Shur Shur Nagachat Shifcha. What happens though if the Shur gores a Shifcha, so not a regular Jewish woman, but rather a Shifcha, the Yatsu Ladeha, and she miscarries? Then Mishalom Dmei Vlodis. Then the owner of the Shur does pay Dmei Vlodis. My time. Why is that? Because Hamarta Ba'ambarta Ba'almahu Da'azik. Because then it's the equivalent of that his animal has injured it's the equivalent of the animal having injured a pregnant donkey. And just like if your animal injures another pregnant animal, then as we learned the other day, Yechayev for the Nezakin to the mother animal and to the baby. A shifcha is considered like that also. The Amakra, as the Pasuk says, if the Avraham says to Eliezer, Shvulachan Pari Machamer, stay over here with the donkey, implying Amad Dem Lachamer, that the Avadim are people, are a nation, people like donkeys.
But only she's similar to a donkey.
So therefore, because she's similar to a donkey, so therefore the owner of the shur will be hired for the vlodis, just as he would for the vlodis of a donkey or any other animal. The Mishnah said, "Kaitzit Mishalom Dmei Vlodis." How do you figure out Dmei Vlodis? The question is, what do you mean it's made of lotus? What do you mean the value of the children? Shvach lotus mi bari leitz. What is the Mishnah saying? That you figure out how much was she worth while she was pregnant, and how much is she worth when she's not pregnant anymore. Now, you have, there's a few things that go into that. So there's the actual babies themselves, but again, there's also the weight that she puts on during the pregnancy. So according to Rashi, the point of the Gemara's question is that the Mishnah should have mentioned both Dmei Vlodis and Shvach Vlodis. According to Tosfos, that you actually calculate Dmei Vlodis separately, and the Mishnah is not even mentioning that, then the question is, the Mishnah should have only said Shvach Vlodis. The Mishnah should have only told us, how do you calculate this fact that before she weighed more, now she weighs less?
She's worth more because she's pregnant, right?
Well, but again, just like we had the other day in the case of the pregnant parta, there's a few, you can break that down into a few things. There's the value of the actual blooders, and then there's the value of the shuman, the fact that because the actual weight that she put on, the actual fat that she put on during the pregnancy, and then there's also what we talked about the other day, nipcha, the fact that she looks larger, the fact that, again, that a prospective buyer would pay more for somebody who looks big and healthy. That's what we're trying to figure out here. When the Mishnah said "take the shaman dmei vlodis," sounds like it means only the value of the baby. Well, don't we have to consider the fat of nipcha and all that also? Okay, so different Rishonim talk about what about those things? It's fine. It's fine. There's various possibilities. I mean, we did learn in Ksubas that a husband has the responsibility to pay his wife's medical bills. One of the Tachanim did Abanim. So some Rishonim say on that basis the Ripui should go to him, and he'll be the one to pay the doctor's bills. Other Rishonim learn that no, it goes to her. Similar kind of thing as Machloket as far as Shevet. On the one hand, I mean, she's responsible to do housework around the house, again, if we learn in Ksubas. So on that logic, the Shevet should go to the husband. But on the other hand, there were others say that no, the Shevet goes to her as well, because after all, it was an injury directly to her. Tsar definitely goes to her. Nezek is what was with, I mean, the Dmei Vlodis, but there's also Nezek to her.
Even though everything women own belongs to her husband, she can have her own separate thing. People give her money.
Yeah.
She can buy
one thing. Yeah. By the way, Rashi points out over here that actually, as far as Nezek, all we're talking about over here is the amount, the difference in value between when she was pregnant versus not. But when you get down to it, there is also the fact there's actual nezek to her body. So Rashi explains, based on a Gemara that we learned in Ksubas, actually a Mishnah over there, that said that it depends whether the injury is in a visible part of her body. If it is visible, if it's an invisible area, then the husband gets two-thirds of the nezek and she gets one-third. If it's a place that's not visible, or if it's a place that's not as visible, that's under her clothes, then she gets two-thirds and he gets one-third. So either way, yeah, she is going to get some independent thing out of it. Okay. So anyway, so the expression in the Mishnah doesn't seem to be right, because the Dmei Vlodis implies just the value of the babies, and here we need to deal with Shvach Vlodis as well, or according to Tosfos exclusively. And so it's Hafinami Karma, you're right, that's what the Mishnah means. Hey, Simashan, Dmei Vlodis, Ushvach Vlodis. How do you figure all that? Dmei Vlodis and the Shvach Vlodis. Shamanet Eshakame Yabad Shalayoda. You figure out how much would she have been worth before she gave birth, Akame Yabad, and how much she's worth after she gave birth, and the difference in that is attributed to the Vlodis and the Shvach. Then we said, Omer Rav Shimon Gamliel, then came Yisha Isha Yeletis Meshvachas. If so, Rav Shimon Gamliel says, then when after a woman gives birth, she goes up in value. My Kama, what does he mean by that? Omer Rav Hachi Kama, what he means is like this. The Chi Isha Meshvachas, Kodim Shetelet Yosem Al-Acha Shetelet. Why? Is a woman worth more before she's given birth than afterwards? Bala Isha Meshvachas Al-Acha Shetelet Yosem Kodim Shetelet. On the contrary, she's worth more after she gives birth. Because before she gives birth, she may die in childbirth. So the person is going to pay less for her because she looks bigger and fatter and whatever. But on the other hand, there's more of it. You're taking more of a risk.
And you're figuring the blood separately.
Yeah, but no, we're talking about the value of the blood, right? But there's also the effect that pregnancy has on her body. That she may end up dying in childbirth, and then not only you won't have bloodless, you won't have shifts either.
So you've got to pay for the blood, and also the change in the change into the woman.
Right.
open issue went up or went down.
That's what Rashim Gamliel is arguing. If you're going according, if you're figuring out, okay, the value of the blood is, again, according to Tosfos, that's a separate thing, but whatever. You're figuring the Shvat, you're figuring the Nipcha, you're figuring whatever. But on the other hand, don't you have to weigh that against the fact that any potential buyer is taking, let's say you count the blood as separately. Let's say you say, for example, I would sell you this woman in the shifa, where you have the woman and I'll keep the blood, so vice versa, whatever. But whoever's buying the woman is taking a risk in that. If she ends up dying in childbirth, you don't have an issue anymore. So on the contrary, before she gave birth, she's worth less. After she gives birth, she's worth more. How are you paying the difference in value that she was worth more before and less now? When it's the other way around. Now that she's not pregnant anymore, there's less of a risk to her life. Ella, so that's what he says. Shamanas have lotus. So what you have to do is you just have to figure out the value of the children and give that to the husband. In fact, we learn a braita that explains Rav Shimon Gamliel's opinion exactly that way. Why is a woman worth more? Is she in better health before she gives birth than afterwards? On the contrary, she's in better health, worth more afterwards than before. Okay, that's one explanation. Rava says no. The Mishnah means like this. What are you telling me? Okay, the Torah tells us the husband is entitled to dmei vlad. It's fine. But what about the increase in value of her body? The fact that she weighs more, the fact that she has more fat on her, etc. Is all that shvach supposed to go to the husband for whom she's bearing these babies? Doesn't she also participate in the shvach of the children? It's her group after all. So what are you telling me? In other words, according to Rava's explanation, the question is not whether she's worth more when she's pregnant or after. Why are you telling me, given that we explained the Mishnah before to be saying that it's asking how much is made lovet and how much is shvach lovet? Why are you making a blanket statement in the Mishnah? You give it all to the husband. The lovet is fine. There's a cost of the Torah tells us he's entitled to that money. Why should the extra value for the fat and the nipcha and whatever, why should that go exclusively to him?
That it went down after she...
No. Let's assume that her value goes up. Let's even assume that her value is greater when she's pregnant versus not. The Gemara will talk about soon reasons to distinguish between different circumstances.
Greater pregnant than after.
So again, let's say for example, on the market she would have been worth $20 more pregnant. Let's say fine. Let's say that $20 includes the value of the baby and the extra fat and the fact that she looks larger.
Yeah.
Fine. The blood is part of that. Okay, I can understand those to the husband. The Torah says that. Why should among that $20? Why should the extra value for the fat on her, the extra value for the fact that she looks larger?
He already caused her damage. She lost her blood, and she herself.
And she herself now lost her pregnancy weight.
So why should they go to the husband?
That's what Rav Shimon Gamliel is arguing. Why should all of that go to the husband? You should have to distinguish between the value of the baby versus the value of the extra fat on her, etc. The Ainla asks him for Shvach Lodis Klum, doesn't she get anything of the Shvach Lodis at all? Ella, no. Therefore, according to Rava, what Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying is Shamanas of Lodis, you figure out the value of the Lodis, for Nois Mabal, that you give for the husband, because the Torah says so. Well, Shvach Lodis Chokin, but the increase in value in her body that came about because of the pregnancy, that she and her husband split, says Rav Shimon Gamliel. And Tani Nami Achi, in fact, we learn a braita that goes according to that explanation of Rav Shimon Gamliel. That on Rav Shimon Gamliel, Chi Isha Lamisha Yeledes Mashpachat. Why does a woman shvach only go to the one that she's giving birth to for her husband? That in La Asma for shvach Lodes Klum, doesn't she share in the shvach as well? It's her body after all. Ela Shaman Nezek Lesnasma, the Sire Lesnasma. So we figure out the Nezek separately and Sire separately. The Nezek being, in other words, the fact that. That now her body is weaker, meaning in other words, nezek is a different thing than dmei vlodis. Dmei vlodis is the difference between a pregnant woman and an unpregnant woman. Nezek is the difference between a healthy unpregnant woman and a weaker unpregnant woman, where after she's been gored or injured, not gored, whatever, injured, then her own body is weakened. And sire with nasma, and you figure out sire separately. Vishamanis of blood is finished from the bowel. So you figure out the blood, you give that to the husband. So nezek and sire go to her, or part of them at least goes to her, as Rashi said before, part of the nezek will go to her, part will go to her husband. The tsar will go to her. The vlodis you'll give to the husband. The shvach vlodis choken, and the increase in value, the increase in value in her body that came about because of the vlodis. Again, the difference between a healthy pregnant woman and a healthy unpregnant woman. That choken, that they divide.
It went down because of the.
In other words, there's several different things that went down. The babies were lost. She also lost all that extra pregnancy weight and pregnancy bulk, which would have made her worth more attractive on the slave market. On top of all of that, she's now weaker than she started out to begin with. She's weaker than she started out before she became pregnant, because now there's also the effect of the injury.
Okay, so there's still
that. So that last part, she and her husband get the 2/3, 1/3 thing. That depends whether the difference is visible on her body or not. The tsar, she'll get. The value of the babies, he'll get. And the shvach, the difference between a healthy pregnant woman and a healthy unpregnant woman, meaning, let's say, for example, this blow hadn't injured her at all. All it did was cause her to miscarry. There wouldn't be any nezek. There would just be the difference between pregnant and unpregnant. That we're saying, that we're trimming on the old saying, chok. And for the price, so. In that case, then you have two brises that explain a shimming amil in two different ways. So you have a theater between them. What is he saying? Is he saying that her value actually goes up after she gives birth? Or is he saying that within the depreciation in value from after she gives birth, you have to break out all these separate things? The answer is like kasha. Kan b'makeres, kan b'sheinim b'makeres. No, there's no contradiction, because one case is talking about when it's her first baby. And the other one is talking about when it's not her first baby. When it's her first baby and she's never given birth yet, there's much more of a chance that something will go wrong during the birth and she'll end up dying in childbirth. Therefore, that's the kind of thing where the first braisa comes into play, where Rabba's explanation and the first braisa comes into play. You can't say Rav Shimon Gamliel is arguing that she goes down in value after giving birth. On the contrary, she goes up because a prospective buyer would now be taking less of a risk. Therefore, instead, you just have to calculate made losses and do that. You can't figure the depreciation of her value, because there isn't any, but you do have to figure the depreciation for the fact that there were children, that there were potential children, and now there aren't. Whereas if she's not mevakedus, if she's already given birth before, there's much less of a risk in a later pregnancy. Therefore, you can break out different things, like I said in the second place, and break out the decrease in value between pregnant and unpregnant, and so forth. Fine. So far, that explains Rav Shimon Gamliel. Rabbanon da'ami shvach v'lodes na'ami la'ba'al. Fine. What about according to the Rabbanon, who say that the increase in her value because of the children also goes to the husband? Why? I mean, Rav Shimon Gamliel, at my time, what's the reason? Rav Shimon Gamliel had a good point. It's her body. Why does it go that she should share in it equally with her husband? Why does he get all of it? The reason is because it's not much to tanya, really. It's just because we learn it in a braisa. Mimashma shenem of yotzi l'adam. Given that the pasuk mentions the detail that she miscarried, any idea she yihara. Obviously, before that, she had to have been pregnant. Ma tamad lemahara. So why does the pasuk have to specify? The pasuk starts off with chiyinatran hashem. People are fighting. V'nog ku isha hara. They injure. They hit a pregnant woman. V'yatzu l'deha, and she miscarried. It didn't have to say hara. It could have said v'nog ku isha v'yatzu l'deha. Obviously, if she had children within her, it meant that she's pregnant. Ma tamad lemahara. So what does the word hara come to teach us? Lemalach shvach heroyim l'baal. It comes to teach us that the increase in her value that came about because of being pregnant, the extra fat, the extra bulk, etc., all that goes to the husband. That's the point. In other words, for isha hara, so we learn that there's an increase because of hara, because she's pregnant, meaning an increase in her own value, plus there's the fact that there's the value of the children. All of that I'm going to say is all kasha yoshasala bala isha. It all goes according, it's all given to the husband. Vrita Pshimingam, the Ohio Hara Maidosh. They find Vrita Pshimingam. What does Pshimingam you'll do with that word Hara? The answer is Mimboila Vachitanya. He uses it for a different drasha that we learn in a place. It's a Belajman Yakovim. La'olam, any chayav abshia kena kenege beis haheroyim. That actually the one who hit her is not chayav unless he actually hit her opposite the place where she's pregnant, meaning he hit her in the stomach. So he's only chayav if he hits her connected beis haheroyim in the stomach. However, then it would be grum. However, Amar Papa, loy tema connected beis haheroyim mamish doesn't literally mean he has to hit her in the stomach. Ela kol hecha besolik beshichma leblad. It means any place where he would hit her where that could cause the baby to get shichma, literally means heat. So like it could cause an overheating in her body, which then harms the baby. But basically, it means anywhere in her torso. For example, if he hit her in the leg or in the arm, then she miscarried because of that, he wouldn't be chayav for dmei blood. That's not considered a direct thing.
What about Bar-Mei's leg?
Does
he got to be right away
for being here later? Yeah, Maposha point out that actually it's not like the Chachamim wouldn't agree with that principle. They would. The difference is they say you don't need a posh for it. Anyway, the principle that if he hits her in an arm or a leg and she miscarries, that he's not chayav for dmei blood. Only if he hits her in the torso. The difference is they would say you don't need a posset. There are offenses, for example. You don't need a posset for that. Because it's a known thing. Whenever one person injures another, always Beis Din has to start figuring out what was the force of the blow, where did it take place, how much damage was it expected to do, etc. So therefore, yes, as a matter of course, they'll figure out, he hit her on the arm, that shouldn't have caused her to miscarry. So therefore, you don't need a posuk to tell us that. Whereas Rebbe Lezman Yaakov and Rebbe Shimon Gamliel are saying, nevertheless, the posuk wants to spell it out. No, it's only dinim up. If she's killed, that's a different matter. Then you get into the whole question. If Ye Austin is the next person to talk to that, then you get into the question, first of all, we have the opinion of Rip Shimon that we mentioned last week, that if you meant to kill one person, you accidentally killed somebody else, you're potter, where it's like, well, say, you're chayav, yeah, it gets into all that, which we previously said.
So they have to know every word has to be exact. The fact that the Hara has to be darshened by everybody. You can't just say, well, it's the derech of the...
Right.
The
Mishnah of the Pasuk, yeah. Okay. So the Mishnah said, "How's a shifcha b'nishtapra?" That if she was a shifcha who was freed, a giyuris, potter. So we said the one who caused the damage is potter. Amar Rabba, loyshanu ela shachava b'chaya ger metaget. This only applies if he injured her while the ger, her husband, was still alive, and then the ger died. What happens? Given the chavav of a chayagir, because once he injured her and made her miscarry while the ger, her husband, was alive, zachabahu ger, the ger has been zolche in that money at that point.
He's got no yoshim.
Given the mes ager, and once he dies without any yoshim, zocha b'hu min ager, then this yid who injured this woman is zoche in that money from the ger, because again, the ger's money is hefker. Yeah.
He doesn't
have to pay. Right. Avo chavav la'acham, this is ager, but that's what Rabbi is saying. If the person injured her after her husband died, then she is the one who is zoche in that money. Because effectively what happens is, Rashi says then, it's sort of like, so we're saying anybody who's machzik in a ger's property after he dies gets to keep it. Fine. Effectively, she has a chazaka on those babies because they're inside of her. So therefore, she has first chazaka over them. They now become her property. And therefore, when he caused her to miscarry, he damaged property of hers. Therefore, he's obligated to pay her. However, Amar Rav Chista, Mori Dichi, Rav Chista says, the Baal HaShmua Zu, Rashi says, listen, you Rabbah who said that teaching, I want to ask you, is that how it works? What are the Vladis considered like property? Are they like a bundle of money? Vezachi Behu, that she's Zoycha, and then once her husband dies? They're not considered Nechasim.
What things. You shouldn't get paid.
Well, no. What he argues is, in other words, that in this case, it's not a question of Yerusha or not. It's not a question of Yerusha or not. When he's alive, the Torah is. In other words, he has a certain ownership over these beloved, but only he has only an ownership insofar as he's entitled to the made beloved. But it's not the kind of thing that you can that somebody else can yarshim from you. It's not like a bag of money or something that somebody else can yarshim from you.
Anybody.
So therefore. No, rather, Rav Chisda says if the husband is still alive or his yorshim, then the Torah is mezakeh them the money. Let's say labal, but if the husband is dead, life, then nothing. She doesn't get it either. It's not something that she yarshin, that she could yarshin, or not even yarshin. It's not something that she could be zoicha from Hefker. It's not like machasim of his that she could be zoicha in from Hefker. It's something that the Torah gave him a certain source. If he is not around and he has no yoshim, then nobody else has that tzus.
The
blood is inside her, but nevertheless, it's not property which he left over, which now becomes hefker. It's rather the Torah declared he has a certain tzus, but only he or his yoshim, nobody else. A woman doesn't yoshim her husband, therefore nothing to talk about. If the children were born, then fine. They'd be considered their father's children. Fine, no question about it. But while they're still unborn, then they're not, in other words, there is a chiyuv to pay for them, but you can't consider them to be an object that has monetary value, which therefore you can be zeicha from the nechassim of a gift. The Gemara says, mate, we have a contradiction. A price says, if a person hits a pregnant woman and makes her miscarry, he gives the nezik and sire to the woman, and he gives the dmei vlodis to the husband. Ein habal, if there's no husband, noisin the yosha, you give the money to his yoshim. Ein ha'isha, if the woman is not around, which means, and it means that she died from something else, unrelated, and we learned previously, when we learned last week, the first sugya about this, we said we're talking about that she's already divorced, so her husband is not in the picture anymore. Noisim le'yoshel, so you give it to her yoshim. And the bride continues, ha'is a shivcha v'nishtacher, if she's a shivcha who was freed, a diyoret, zocha, then the person who injured her is zocha, and the money, he doesn't have to give it. There's no husband, yeah. It sounds like the bride means doesn't matter regardless if she's a geyoris or a mishachreris, meaning that her husband is a ger or an eben mishachra, doesn't matter whether the injury happened while he was still alive or after he died. Either way, once he's dead, nothing happens. So
the ger died.
Yeah, the ger died. Even after Mrs. Hager, it sounds like the guy doesn't have to pay it. According to Rabba, he should have to. So the question is on Rabba. Okay, the answer is, Amri said the answer to me, I differ from that. So what, you think the Braise is any stronger than the Mishnah? Rabba doth explain that our Mishnah is talking about where he injured her while the Ger was alive, so the Ger was entitled to the money, and then he died. You could say the same thing in the Braise, that the Braise attack means only in that case. Maybe the Braise is not talking about the case where the Ger died before the injury ever happened. Maybe in that case, then the taka, like Rabbi is saying, then she would be entitled to the money. You can't prove from it one way or the other. The Iboy thing, or you could also answer, La'acha misses a ger. You could answer that the bride maybe means even after the ger died. The Tani Zochsa, however, you don't say that Zochsa, the one who injured her, is Zochsa in the money. Rather, Zochsa, she is Zochsa in the money. Which first it says, not really, the Gemara is not trying to change the wording of the Braise. It just means Zocha is a generic word, meaning whoever is entitled to that money is entitled to it. In this case, if her husband is dead already, before, according to Rabba, before the injury ever happened, she's the one who's Zocha, because she's the one who was Zocha and these children Minahaska, basically. Gemara says, Lema Ketanoin. Should we say that this machlokus of Rabba and Rav Chisda is basically like a machlokus Tanoin? Because the Braise says, Bas Yisrael Shenisus Lager, a Jewish woman who gets married to a Ger, and it's Abram, who becomes pregnant from him, and somebody injures her and makes her miscarry during the lifetime of the Ger while her husband is alive. Noisim's made Lodis Lager. Then he gives made Lodis to the Ger. Fine, everybody agrees to that. La'acha misses a Ger, but if he injures her after the Ger dies, then you have two different Braises. Tony Choda Chayev, Tony Choda Potter. One writer says that in that case he's Chayev to pay. The pastor then he pays her because the Ger has no Yershim. The other one says he's Potter. Because like Rav Chisda says, because the children are not a monetary object. The schus was given to the Ger, and once he said, there's nobody to give it to. My last anointing. So wouldn't that mean then that the smachlok, that the rabba would be going like the Braisa says Chayev, and Rav Chisda would be going like the Braisa says Potter? The answer is no. The Rabba Vade Tanoi. No, it's true. According to Rabba, necessarily you have to say that there is the machlokus of the machlokus Tanoi. According to Rabba, there's no way that you can say that you can say according to his shit of Potter. So necessarily he'll have to say, fine, there's one Tanoi who says Chayev, I follow that Tanoi. And there's another Tanoi who says Potter. El Rav Chisda Milema Tanoi. According to Rav Chisda, do we necessarily have to say that Rav Chisda would say, I only agree with one Tanoi? No, because like Kasha. Because Rav Chisda can answer that one braisa is like the Rabbanon and the other is like Rav Shimon Gamliel of our Mishnah. That in our Mishnah we said that when it comes to the shvach of Lodos, the husband gets that as well. Whereas Rav Shimon Gamliel says that she splits it with her husband. So fine, in this case, even it's true, Rav Chisda would say that he's potter. However, there is still an angle that she is entitled to in the first place, namely half of the Shavach Lodos, and that he's chayev. The question is, either Shimon Gamliel might hear Lacham Misaf, the Machayim Nami Slopalga. Okay, according to Shimon Gamliel, then why does the Braisa have to mention anything about that her husband died? And if her husband was still alive, also he'd be chayev to pay her a certain amount. The answer is yes, the chayim is lapalga, true. But while her husband is alive, she's entitled to only half of it. La'achamisa kule, whereas what the braisa is trying to stress is that after her husband dies, she's going to be zoicha in all of the shvach v'lodes. It's true. The tmei v'lodes is something that the Torah granted only to the husband, and therefore no husband. Then it's the children are not considered a monetary thing. Therefore, she can't have been zoicha in this matter. Shvach v'lodes, though, the increase in value of her own body, that is something that has monetary value. That can be considered something that up until now half of that belonged to the ger, her husband, and half of it belonged to her. Now that he's dead, she's the muchzik, and therefore she ends up with all of it. Or you could also answer Habahar of Shimon Gamliel. You could say both brachos, the one that says Chayev and the one that says Potter, are both appointed of Shimon Gamliel. Just can be shvach modus, can be mei modus. Yes, one brachos is talking about the shvach modus, which is Chayev to pay, and the other one is talking about the mei modus, which Rav Chisda is saying that he's Potter. The problem with that is Amri. They said though that doesn't work. Mishvach lodis lishma to made lodis. That doesn't really work because once we mentioned what from the din of shvach lodis, we should according to Rav Chisda, we're saying that when the ger was alive, half the shvach lodis went to him. So by the same logic, she ought to be getting the dmei lodis as well. After all, what's the logical reason to differentiate? Umidir b'shemim amniel lishma the rabbanon. And given that b'shemim amniel is saying this, we should say that, okay, the Rabbanon are arguing while the husband is alive, what he gets and what she gets. But the Pashtus, they would agree that after he's dead, whatever she's getting, she's getting everything, so why would there even be? Why would we even say there's a difference between Shvach and Dmei Vlodos, if we look at it that way? And so the answer, the difference is like Shvach Vlodos, the Shaycha Yodav Gabayu. When it comes to the Shvach, the increase in value of her own body, she had a certain portion of it even while he was alive. She had a shaykh to say it while he was alive. Therefore, when he's dead, she's zoicha in all of it. Dmei vlodis, a shaykh of yodim davai, whereas dmei vlodis, where when her husband was alive, she wasn't entitled to any of it because the Torah was mezakah, all of it to the husband, but not that of a kasha yosha salabala isha, was zakah real klaus. So we could still differentiate and say that now, even though he's dead, we could say that we could say that Rav Shimon Gamliel would still say she doesn't get it at all. And needed a chacham. And so therefore, you still could explain the braisa after all that way and say that the braisa is chayev means he's chayev for shvach lodos, because half of it he would have had to pay her when her husband was alive anyway, so now she gets both halves of it, the half that she would have been entitled to l'chatchila and the half that she gets from Hefker, from her husband's chatzim. Whereas mei vlodos, all of it would have gone to him while he's alive, he's gone. He has no yoshim. According to the Priester, it's not a month that we've lauded ourselves on our monetary thing that anybody can be zoche in. Therefore, that's it. The value of that is gone. And therefore, he's positive.